Hey everyone, before we get started with today's episode, I just want to make a little disclaimer. Today's case involves a sensitive topic, and although I will never give or play descriptions that I deem to be too graphic in nature, listener discretion is advised.
I'm literally speechless with how happy I am. My belly is back, OMG, and I'm never, ever, ever, ever letting it get like this again. You're about to see me looking freaking better than before, OMG.
Ohio prosecutor Steve Knippen is reading a text message Brooke Schuyler Richardson sent to her mother 2 days after her high school prom. In 2017, the 18-year-old cheerleader went by Schuyler.
Brooke was a popular senior at Carlisle High School, and she had plans to attend the University of Cincinnati in the fall of 2017. To outside observers, Brooke Richardson had the perfect life.
Schuyler was reportedly very concerned with her appearance and spent a lot of time in front of her mirror in the mornings, getting ready. In February 2017, Schuyler's mother, Kim, took her to buy her prom dress. It was a red, sequined mermaid cut with ruffles at the bottom. Kim took a photo of Schuyler in the dress at the store when they bought it. And in May 2017, Kim took another photo of her daughter in that same red dress on Schuyler's prom night. She thought her daughter looked healthy, filled out, and weighed an appropriate amount. What Kim wasn't expecting was for those photos, along with the text messages from her daughter, to be entered into evidence in a courtroom.
These text messages that the prosecutor takes grossly out of context about her body and her image of her body. She was like that for years, since really eighth grade. And her mother was very obsessive. And her mother now, I think, realizes that the way in which she talked to Schuyler, cheering her on about losing weight, was like throwing gasoline on a fire, an eating disorder. Didn't deal with it well.
That's criminal defense attorney Charles M. Ritgers. He says Schuyler suffered from an eating disorder since she was 12 years old. Kim and her husband, Scott, took their daughter to see a nutritionist and a psychologist because they were so worried about it. They saw their daughter's weight fluctuate up and down more than 40 pounds over the past few years. And at 5'2" tall, the weight change was obvious.
But back in August of 2016, Brooke was briefly involved with a boy by the name of Trey Johnson, who was from West Carrollton. During the month of August of 2016, Brooke and Trey had sex on two different occasions. One of those times, they did not use any protection.
Towards the end of August 2016, Schuyler broke it off with Trey. She told him she wanted to focus on cheerleading and blocked him on social media. 5 months later, in January 2017, Schuyler started dating Brandon, who was a year younger. Before long, they were texting how much they loved each other and how they were going to spend the rest of their lives together. In April 2017, Brooke had her mother make an appointment at her gynecologist, asking for birth control pills.
The evidence will show that at the time Brooke had her mother schedule this appointment, she already suspected that she was pregnant and she was looking for verification. And on April 26th, 2017, nearly 8 months after she broke it off with Trey Johnson, Brooke's worst fears were confirmed when Dr. Andrews told her that she was, in fact, pregnant.
Dr. Andrew, who was Schuyler's mother's doctor, told Schuyler she was pregnant. He estimated she was already in her third trimester and told her to expect to be delivering a baby in just 10 weeks. Dr. Andrew saw the baby's heart rate was strong, but Schuyler said she could not have this baby.
So Schuyler does think she has time, and you are going to see that her mother does not and would not probably have reacted to her pregnancy well. but she thinks she has time before she has to tell her mother and her boyfriend that she's pregnant. The doctor says within 10 weeks. Well, Skylar thinks she has 8 to 10 weeks.
Skylar doesn't tell a soul about what her doctor had just told her. 9 days later, Kim stitches her daughter up in that red dress, and Skylar goes to her senior prom with her boyfriend Brandon on May 5th. But she's having cramps. The next day, Skylar keeps ignoring the cramping and goes to a Cincinnati Redskins baseball game with her parents and Brandon. After the game, they come home. Scott and Kim go to bed. Skylar and Brandon are hanging out downstairs on the couch. Brandon goes home for his 10:30 p.m. curfew, and Skylar goes to her bed. She is in such intense pain at this point, she cannot sleep.
And sometime around 2 or 3 in the morning, she has what she thinks is the most intense pain she's ever felt. She walks to the top of the stairs. She's going to go downstairs to get some Aleve to help with the pain. And she can't keep her legs under her.
She goes into her bathroom, sits down on the toilet, and delivers a baby.
But the baby is white. The umbilical cord is not attached. The baby's not breathing. Not moving, no sounds.
That's according to defense attorney Charles M. Ritgers. He says Skylar delivered a stillborn child. The state of Ohio feels differently, however. Prosecutor Steve Knippen has a different version of events.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are here today because the defendant, Brooke Richardson, murdered a baby that she didn't want and never intended to keep.
Today, we're examining the case of Ohio versus Brooke Skylar Richardson. Did Skylar murder her baby and hide the birth in order to protect her perfect life, as the state claims? Or was she a scared teenage girl who made poor choices after delivering a stillborn baby, as her defense claims? This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, Episode 96, Part 1. On April 25th, 2017, Skylar text messaged her mom, Kim, quote, "Can I please not go to the doctor tomorrow? I changed my mind. I don't want to, and I don't want to be on the pill. I'm way too scared to go. And I'm completely scared to. I'm seriously panicking about prom and not looking my best. It's hitting me how much I hate myself for getting that dress and looking like I do when it's my senior prom. I'm going to look so bad. I finally have friends to go with, a great group and a great date. I've screwed myself so much with how I look, and I'm freaking out and I feel so scared. I just want everything to be okay, and you tell me it will be okay." Kim replied, "I'm here for you and it will be okay. Just relax. Do not panic." Skylar wrote, "I'm trying not to, just in freakout mode. I want to look amazing again more than anything. I hate being like this so much." Kim responded, "Honey, you run each day and literally drop sweat, eat good, and you can drop quick. I'm serious. If you get serious, you can probably pull it off." Skylar wrote, "That's what I think and I hope, but every time I look at myself in that dress, I just cringe. I'm so afraid I'm going to look bad." Kim said, "Turn those thoughts into how to burn as much and do as much every single day, or else you will be sad. Get a plan in place. Only you can do that." Skylar said, "Okay." "But we need to talk about the doctor thing," Kim wrote. "You are doing adult actions. You do not want to get pregnant. Then there is no college because you will have to work to feed your baby. No joke. Who will raise it?" Skylar agreed to go. Skylar went to her appointment with Dr. William Andrew the next day. Kim sat in the waiting room. Dr. Andrew is an OBGYN at Hilltop Obstetrics and Gynecology in Ohio. He's delivered more than 6,000 babies in his 23 years of his career. Among them, Skylar and her brother Jackson. During her appointment with Dr. Andrew, Skylar asked for a birth control prescription. Skylar and Dr. Andrew had a general discussion about the use of birth control, why it's a good thing for reasons other than just birth control, and he took her medical history. Skylar told Dr. Andrew she had her last menstrual period recently. She declined to have a gynecological exam, however, and he didn't want to force it upon her. He asked her for a urine sample and deemed it necessary for her to have a pregnancy test. The test came back positive.
What was her reaction upon you telling her that she was pregnant?
She broke into tears. She was surprised.
Was she crying?
She did.
What statements was she making, if any?
She said that she could not have she was not prepared to deliver a baby. She could not have a baby.
Okay. How many times do you think she said that she couldn't have a baby?
I remember it at least once.
He then asked Skylar to lay down and performed a general physical exam.
What did the fundal height measurement reveal at that time?
I recorded it in the medical record as 32 centimeters.
And what does that mean when you say it was 32 centimeters?
So roughly speaking, the fundal height in centimeters is equal to the gestational age in weeks.
That means Dr. Andrew measured Skylar as 32 weeks pregnant. He then performed a brief ultrasound. He conducted another measurement using the ultrasound, and that showed to be consistent with 32 weeks gestation, but that test was not considered to be definitive. The baby's heart rate was normal at 140. He noted in the medical record that the fetus was presenting head first. He asked Skylar to make another appointment for a formal ultrasound and explained that he wanted to see her back within the week to begin prenatal care. But Skylar never scheduled a follow-up appointment. Dr. Andrew and his staff called her to ask her to come back in, but she never responded. On May 1st, Kim sent Skylar a text message that read, "This is your email from your doctor visit. What does PTPRENANT mean?" Skylar responded, "No clue. I can call later or something and see." Kim said, "You should call right now. Are you joking? Later?" Skylar responded, "Sorry, I just got to school. I'll call now." Kim wrote, "Your life could potentially be over and you will call later." Skylar said, "No, sorry. I meant like I figured it was probably just a mistake. You're scaring me. Please still have a good day, mommy. I'm sorry if you're stressed now, but I wouldn't be getting smaller if I was, and I wouldn't be on birth control. I love you. Please don't be mad at me or sad. It was just an accident. Please, let's have a good day. It's prom week." Kim replied, "I cannot tell you how my heart stopped because I care too much and want you to have a future. That eliminates all that. I will. I just need a few hours to adjust." Skylar wrote, "So did mine. I'm so sorry. That freaking freaked me the freak out too. I was shaking. I'm sorry, okay? Let's make today great. I understand." Skylar and Brandon got dressed up and attended prom together on May 4th. Skylar wore her red dress and Brandon had a matching red tie.
When you guys were at prom that evening, did she give you any indication that she wasn't feeling good?
Yes.
What did she tell you?
She said that she was having bad cramps.
Okay. When she told you that she was having bad cramps, what did you think those cramps were from?
A period.
Okay. Did she tell you they were from a period?
Yes.
Did she give you any reason to believe that they were anything other than cramps from a period?
No.
Brandon said he tried to comfort her, rubbing her back and holding her hand. After the night ended and they both went to their own homes, Brandon texted her around 1 a.m. "I had a lot of fun. You didn't look like you did." Skylar wrote back, "The only time I wasn't having fun was when I started cramping super bad. And I promise, babe, you made it extremely fun." She then states, "It's not your fault, just horrible timing, but you made up for it." Brandon said, "Good. I wish I could have used magic and helped you or cured you." Skylar responded, You practically did cure me by being so understanding and letting me squeeze your hands. Skylar went on to tell Brandon to post some pictures of them together on social media. Brandon asked which photos he can post, and Skylar replied that she looks bad in all of them.
Based on how she was acting that night, were you concerned that she had not had fun at prom with you?
Yes.
Okay. And the first text you send later that day is at 11:03. You sure you still like me? Why did you send that, Brandon?
I guess just reassurance. I just needed some reassurance.
Okay. And she didn't respond back right away, correct?
Yeah.
So that still leaves you with a little bit of doubt about what's happening at this point?
Sure.
Skylar did text back about a half an hour later, saying, "I'm so sorry for not replying. I was having horrible cramps, so I've been laying on my couch with a heating pad this whole time. I'm sorry. I love you always." They had plans to go see a Redskins game later that day. Skylar was taking him to the game as a birthday present. He said they didn't have to go if she didn't want to, but Skylar said no, they'll all go. The next morning after the game, Brandon text messaged Skylar, "Good morning, beautiful babe." Skylar responded, "Good morning, my amazing boy." "How do you feel, babe?" Brandon asked. Skylar said, "I'll tell you about it later, but last night was like the worst ever, and I didn't go to sleep until 5:30. But I feel so much better this morning. I'm happy." She later said, "I hope I never feel like that ever again. That was traumatic." Skylar went to the gym later that afternoon. They told each other they loved each other and wanted to be together forever. Skylar also sent her mom a text message on the morning of May 7th. "I'm literally speechless with how happy I am. My belly is back. OMG. I am never, ever, ever, ever letting it get like this again. You're about to see me look freaking better than before. OMG. Kim responded, "That is what I'm talking about. What a great attitude. It all paid off. I am so proud. You will look amazing at school tomorrow." Skylar said, "I am literally so excited now just for dinner to wear something cute. Yay, my belly is back. Now I am taking this opportunity to make it amazing." "Yes," Kim responded in all caps. The text messages continued. Skylar said, "I must start weighing myself every week and getting serious about this, like I'm about to be boss looking." Kim responded, "Could not be prouder." Months passed by. Skylar graduated from high school and prepared to begin her freshman year at the University of Cincinnati. On July 12th, Skylar had another appointment for birth control. This time, she saw a different doctor, Dr. Casey Boyce. Hilltop automatically assigned her to Dr. Boyce due to scheduling. Dr. Andrew found out about Skylar's appointment and told Dr. Boyce about Skylar's positive pregnancy test. He estimated that she would have delivered the baby by then.
I walk in, I always introduce myself, say, "I'm Dr. Casey Boyce, it's nice to see you." I sit down, I say, "What brings you in today?" Mm-hmm. And she says to get a refill on her birth control. And then I say, "Okay, I'll be happy to do that. But you know, I have to ask you, the last time you were here, you were pregnant and you're no longer pregnant. What happened?"
Immediately, Skylar started crying. Dr. Boyce asked her what had happened to her child.
She started sobbing and she said, "I had it alone in my house and I buried it in my backyard."
And when you heard this information from her, what did you do in response?
I asked a few more questions. I was kind of in a state of shock. I said, "Does anyone know about this?" And she said, "No." I said, "No one heard you have the baby?" She said, "No." I said, "Labor is incredibly painful." And she started crying harder and said, "Yes, yes, it's awful."
Dr. Boyce offered to do a physical exam, but Skylar declined. She also encouraged Skylar to get counseling. She then refilled her birth control prescription. Dr. Boyce met with Dr. Andrew, and the two met with legal counsel. Then they contacted the police. Warren County Sheriff's Office Lieutenant John Fain was assigned to the case. Lieutenant Fain, along with another detective and deputy, drove to the Richardson home. Shortly thereafter, Scott Richardson pulled into his driveway.
They approached me and said they needed to talk to my daughter about something she may have witnessed.
Okay. And what did you do next?
I called Skylar and told her she needed to come home.
Okay. Where was she?
She was at her grandma's house with Brandon and his little sister swimming.
Scott said he didn't think Skylar was in trouble. He said he was told at least a few times that she wasn't in trouble. Once Skylar came home, Scott drove her to the police station.
I assumed, based on what I was told, that they were going to ask her about something she may have witnessed. So I told her to tell the truth, to make sure she didn't make anything up, and to cooperate.
Did you teach Jackson and Skylar to respect the police and authority?
I mean, we always thought that that's what we should do.
Scott called Kim and she met them at the police station. Skylar went into the interrogation room to speak with Lieutenant Fain and Detective KDG on her own.
Can you just tell me what's happening?
Yes, I go ahead just a second. Maybe nothing has happened. So that's what we're... I'm going to wait for Katie to come in here. Maybe nothing has happened, okay? So that's what... And we don't know until we talk to you, okay? You're the one that's going to be able to help us with this, okay?
The audio in these recordings are not the best, but I'll recap the important parts after playing the clips. Skylar was already sitting in the room when Lieutenant Fain walked in. She asks him to tell her what's happening. He says he's waiting for Detective G, but that Skylar's the one who's going to help them. The room is equipped for audio and video recordings, and Lieutenant Fain also used his own handheld recorder. Skylar asks Lieutenant Fain if she's going to be arrested, and he tells her, "I don't think so. No." He tells her, "That's not our plan." Detective KDG then walks in. Lieutenant Fain tells Skylar that he has two daughters, not too much older than her, so he understands what it's like as a parent to talk to a daughter. He says they have no tricks for her, trying to calm Skylar's nerves. They then advise her of her rights.
And if I got information right from the doctors, they maybe did an ultrasound?
I think so, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And did they tell you how far pregnant you were, how many weeks?
I'll be completely honest, I didn't listen.
Okay.
I didn't hear.
Okay. Could they have told you 32 weeks, or maybe they could?
Maybe. I know I was
okay.
Far along.
And you was probably, you know, you're far along. Was it a shock to you?
It was kind of.
Okay, reason I asked that is because they said you didn't know you were pregnant, even though you were that far along, you didn't know. Did you have some suspicion? Or?
Yeah, I just didn't want to, I didn't want to let myself know.
Understand. I understand that you're 18. I'm actually a grandfather because my oldest daughter, she got pregnant when she was young, and I remember she was so scared and so nervous, and especially to tell me, I think, was her biggest fear because she just thought, I don't know, just had all the thoughts that a young girl is going to have, you know, when that's not really what you're planning. You're just planning on being a freshman at UC. I mean, you know that, I'm sure, you know, and you're pregnant, so.
Skylar tells Lieutenant Fain that she had suspicions that she was pregnant because she was really big. Her periods were irregular, so she says she tried to think that that was why she hadn't gotten one in months.
You find out they confirm that you are pregnant. What goes through your mind?
My parents are going to kill me. I didn't want to tell them. I didn't want to tell them at all. I still don't really want to tell them, but now they're going to know.
Okay.
They'll probably be very disappointed in me.
She says she didn't want to tell her parents and that they're probably going to be very disappointed in her. Lieutenant Fain says that sounds like what went through his daughter's mind when she found out she was pregnant at 18 years old. Skylar says she didn't want to have the baby, but she didn't want to get rid of it. She then asks them if she's in trouble. Lieutenant Fain says he's there to find out what happened and asks her to walk them through what happened on May 7th.
I had the baby and I didn't...
Okay, hold on a second. When you say you had the baby, where were you?
I was in my bathroom.
You were in your bathroom? Okay, were you on the toilet or in the bathtub or on the floor?
Toilet.
Were you seated on the toilet?
Yeah, that's when I had the baby.
Okay, how did you... How did you know you were going to have her? Did you have
I could feel it and something needed to come out. I could feel it.
So you felt that feeling?
Yeah.
Do you know, have you ever heard the term when people say their water broke?
Yeah, I don't think.
But you didn't
that.
Feel
I don't
that.
Know.
Well, and you would, I think you'd probably
I don't
know.
Think. It just came out when I pushed and it was breathing. It didn't make any noises.
Skylar explains that she was sitting on the toilet when she delivered her baby. She says she thinks her baby went into the toilet a little bit. She caught her by the head, but she said she honestly doesn't remember. Skylar is crying and tells them that she never hurt her. She says she put the baby in her arms and held her. She couldn't find a heartbeat and the baby wasn't breathing. Lieutenant Fain asks Skylar, "Did you ever hear a cry or a whimper?" Skylar shakes her head, "No."
When you say she didn't have a heartbeat, did you try to check it?
I tried to feel. I tried to feel
in her chest.
I didn't mean to push hard. I just felt.
Okay. And did you, were her eyes open or closed?
They were closed.
They were closed. Okay. Can you remember whether or not she still had the umbilical cord attached to her belly button?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Understand.
Skylar says she took a towel, wrapped the baby in it, and held her in her lap. She was bleeding a lot. She says she never cut the umbilical cord, and her placenta came out the next day.
Okay, so her umbilical cord, did you cut that umbilical cord? Have something to cut that with?
No.
And the only reason I ask that is because you know that's where the baby is, you know, hooked. On, you know, hooked in her belly button, and then the cord is also hooked with the placenta, and usually they deliver together. But that's okay.
Oh my gosh.
That's okay. I know this is. We're trying to make you go back 2.5 months to the worst. I'm going to assume what's the worst memory. You know, the worst memory of your whole life. Are you okay right now?
Yeah. Okay. I just want to know what happened to me. I never meant to hurt her.
I understand that. Skylar, again, like I've told you, we don't think you meant to hurt her. We don't think you hurt her.
Am I going
to
be in trouble?
So, well, I don't know that you're in any trouble. We're trying to help you get through this and try to find out exactly, you know, exactly what happened. So, okay, stay with me here. So now you're holding her and she's on your lap in a towel, right? Try to feel for a heartbeat, but there's not one. Her eyes are closed, and you can tell she's not breathing. What do you do then?
I stayed there with her for a little bit. I tried to see if she could wake up, but I had to bury her. And I think that's... Am I going to be in trouble for that? I know it wasn't
right. For trying to see if she could
breathe, and then
breathe
I had to bury her.
She says she didn't tell anyone she was pregnant, not even a best friend. She says she wishes she had told her mom. She told the investigators that she held the baby and tried to see if she would wake up, but she never did. The baby's eyes were closed and she wasn't breathing. Skylar then says she had to bury her because she didn't tell anyone. She went to her garage, found a shovel, and dug a hole in their backyard.
So you dig a hole, you dig a small hole. Did you place her in the hole? Okay. Was she still in the towel?
No, I took her out of the towel.
You took her out of the towel? Did you lay anything down there in the dirt, or was it just the dirt?
It's just her.
Just the dirt. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just trying to figure out and try to picture. And then you covered her up with dirt, right? And then what did you do as far as, did you do anything else? And the only reason, I guess, Were you worried that someone was going to notice that or see that? Or
I planned to eventually tell my parents.
She says she was eventually planning on telling her parents. She found a flower pot and put it on top of the gravesite, telling investigators that she'd be able to show them where it was. She says she went back into the house and cleaned up the blood with a towel and then threw it out a couple days later. Lieutenant Fain asks her if she thought about having an abortion. Skylar says she would never.
Did you do any research on it?
I kind of thought maybe if I could like figure out if it wasn't, like if I wasn't actually, but no, I don't think, I can't honestly remember. I promise I didn't try and kill her.
Okay. That's what we're trying to figure out. And I don't think, I guess I'm not meaning to say, did you try to kill her? You know, I'm just asking you if you, you know, considered giving yourself an abortion, because that happens a lot.
Okay.
You know, that people give themselves an abortion. Did you ever search anything, on the internet about giving yourself an abortion or having an abortion?
No, I just kind of thought of maybe looking up ways to maybe see if I could not have it, but I never followed through with anything.
What kind of ways did you look at, or where did you?
Looked at maybe how to have an abortion without going to the doctor, but that was it. And I never did anything.
Okay. How did you look that up?
I just Googled it.
Googled it. On your phone or on a tablet or?
Maybe just my phone, I think. I don't know.
She says she also searched how to get rid of a baby. The investigators then leave the room, and Skylar's parents enter. The cameras continue to record.
I'm so sorry, Bobby. I'm sorry.
You should have just told us.
I know. Kids get pregnant every day. Pregnancy is not the end of the world.
I'm so sorry.
I love them.
What did they tell you?
I think they want to know if I killed it myself.
Yeah, you go to jail.
I didn't, though. But this is... I know.
You know, but they can't tell that.
I promise them I didn't do anything.
Now we have a perfect life.
Who's the father?
Trey, that guy I used to date a long time ago.
You lied to me about him. You lied to me about so much. And now you're going to lose brain dinner with us.
Okay, I mean, you did lie.
Well, not about that. I just hurt her.
Kim tells Skylar she lied about Trey and lied to her about so much. She says Skylar is going to lose Brandon over this. She tells Skylar if she goes to jail, it'll be in the papers. The neighbors already called her. Skylar continues to deny killing her baby.
Skylar, you're not going home with us.
Don't start that.
Skylar, I'm telling you, it makes me sick. The cute little bag of popcorn you had, you'll never finish.
Honey, stop. Please stop.
Do you have any idea how we feel?
I had to come from a dead baby by myself.
If you could have gotten this, Skylar, I would have helped you so many times. I told you, if you just tell me, I'm always going to be here for you. I've always told you that I love you. How do you think I feel at the thought of losing my baby?
I'm sorry, Mommy.
I'm losing my child. And I've done everything right.
You have. You just didn't trust your guys.
Okay, please stop. You guys both. We need to stop this right now. We don't know what's going to happen yet. If she told him the truth, I don't even know what they could charge her with. There's no reason to put her in prison. It doesn't mean what you did is not wrong. And it doesn't mean that it's not going to be trouble. But we don't know yet. So let's don't go there.
Scott says it would have been better if Skylar had told them. He says the police are digging up their backyard over something they didn't even know existed. Around the same time, investigators obtained a search warrant for the Richardsons' backyard. crime scene investigators used a soil probe to test for areas of disturbance in the yard. They weren't exactly sure of the right spot, so Skylar agreed to go back to her house with police and show them where her baby's grave was. She walked to the backyard, pointed out the spot, and was then removed from the scene. Investigators noted a slight decompositional odor around the area. They removed weeds around the grave and saw one bone sticking out. They soon recovered more bones, and the search was suspended. Warren County Coroner Russell Updegrove was called in.
When I got there, I continued with the excavation or the removal of the bones from the actual site. Again, some of the dirt had already been turned up, so I continued in the exact location, removing additional bones. And in the process of going deeper, there was some small amount of residual decomposed tissue that was admixed with some of the dirt, admixed with the bones. So what I did was again, there was a fair amount of moisture still in that dirt, so things were kind of sticking together. So I removed what I could easily identify. And then what I did is I took a small trowel and dug probably 3 inches surrounding all the way around where the remains were being recovered to try to capture any other smaller items which may not have been visible to the naked eye because of the consistency of the dirt. So the bones were placed in a bag, and then this other material, which is mostly encompassing dirt and some other smaller items, was placed in a separate container.
He continued to feel around with his hands to find and remove bones. He found some hair and fingernails, but no discernible organs or skin. It would turn out that Kim was right about the media finding out. The story was the lead on the local evening news. Helicopters flew above the Richardsons' home, showing the cop cars and CSI team. Around 8 p.m., Lieutenant Fain released a statement to the public saying, "Although the remains have not yet been identified, initial reports have led investigators to believe that they are that of a stillborn baby." The bones were taken to the coroner's office for forensic pathologist Dr. Susan Brown to conduct an autopsy the next day.
After I started to go through some of those, the dirt and remains that I received, these are ribs and a portion of the vertebral column, the bony structure that protects your spinal cord. So here we're looking at ribs, and you can see that some of the ribs have darkening on the ends of them.
Dr. Brown noted 3 fractures on the skull bones. However, she couldn't say whether those fractures happened before or after death. They recovered nearly a complete set of skeletal remains, aside from some bones that were missing. The coroner's office then called in forensic anthropologist Dr. Elizabeth Murray to do an inventory of all the skeletal remains. They also wanted Dr. Murray to give an estimate of the age of the baby and evaluate for any possible injury. On July 20th, Dr. Murray also noticed darkening on some of the bones. She reported that the darkening could have come from thermal injury, meaning she thought the bones could have been burned. She told this to the coroner.
And I told her, I said, "Well, there was a fire pit in the backyard," but I said, "We didn't even look in the fire pit. I mean, we just excavated the site where we were shown, where the people before me were shown to respond to." So she said, "I'm not, this could be, this discoloration could be from thermal injury." So with her telling me that, I ended up calling Deputy Fain and told him, said, "Dr. Murray has a concern that some of these bones, not many of them, but just a few of the bones, had a very dark color, and she was wondering whether or not this could represent some type of thermal injury."
Lieutenant Fain obtained another search warrant, this one for the Richardson's backyard fire pit, 6 days after the first search. Dr. Updegrove said they found a lot of ash, pieces of burnt wood, chicken bones, and fish bones, but nothing that appeared to be human. Investigators returned to the original gravesite and found more bones, which were then taken back to the coroner's office. While investigators continued to search, Lieutenant Fain asked Skyler to come back to the police station for a second interview. He again questioned her without her parents or an attorney present. They read her rights to her and had her sign the form again, and then they questioned her about the new information received from the scientists. Lieutenant Fain tells her that there's more to her story than what she told them in her first interview. Detective Brandy Carter holds Skylar's hands from across the table and tells her she knows Skylar wants to give her baby a proper burial, but that in order for that to happen, she needs to tell them everything. The audio is not as clear in this recording, but again, I'll recap any important parts you may not hear.
So we know that some more things happened. I think you were trying to minimize what was there, make it easier. I don't know, but there were some other things that happened before she was put in the ground. So let's talk about that. Okay.
The cord might have been wrapped around her neck a little.
Okay. When she came out or after?
Yeah.
Okay. So did you see it wrapped around the neck?
A little bit.
Okay.
Like,
yeah, okay. So like it's around her neck. And what color was she when she came out?
White, I think.
Well, they're all white because they have that sticky, goopy stuff on them. What about like her fingers or whatever? Were they pink? Were they red? Were they... Where was the cord? Like, was it here? Was it on the side? Was it wrapped all the way around her?
Maybe just a little around her.
Okay. And what did you do? You tried to get off but couldn't?
Just a little, yes.
Okay, just wouldn't come off.
Okay.
Is it possible that she maybe breathed a little bit? Like, maybe, you know, before...
Maybe. Okay.
Skylar tells them the baby was born with her cord wrapped around her neck. She also says maybe when asked if it's possible the baby breathed a little. Then Skylar is asked, do you think you squeezed her too hard when you checked to see if she was breathing? Skylar again says maybe.
Let's start there. So now you have picked her out from the toilet and you wrapped her in a towel and held her easily. And just be truthful now. Let's go from there and go with the
rest. But listen, you said something really interesting. You said, I think maybe I held her too tight. Tell me what that means.
I just think she was breathing. I think I squeezed her too hard.
Skylar says she didn't think she was breathing and that she may have squeezed her too hard. She tells them that she named her baby Annabelle. They tell her to keep talking and this will all be done. Detective Carter asks Skylar, does she think the baby died when she squeezed her? Skylar says maybe. Skylar also told them that she was spotting in early April. Then Detective Carter brings out the new information about the bones having possibly been burned.
Tell me about the fire.
The fire.
There's some evidence to show that there was some burning on her.
Just burn her? I promise on anything I didn't burn her. My dad has lots of bonfires, but I didn't burn her.
There's some charring and stuff on some of her bones, so.
I didn't burn her.
Are you sure?
I swear on anything.
You're sure?
I'm sure of.
You didn't, like, did you burn anything around her? Did you try to, maybe melt the dirt or anything? Was there any reason for any of that?
No.
Skylar denies doing anything with the fire to Annabelle. Detective Carter asks Skylar if she maybe wanted to cremate her daughter and tried to light her on fire, but then realized it wasn't a good idea. They say they understand Skylar and her parents want to give the baby a proper final resting place due to religious reasons, but that they can't give the remains back until they know everything. Tell me everything that you were thinking and everything you did, just so I know, like I was there, Detective Carter tells her. Skylar, I thought I could cremate her. I had a lighter and just... Detective Carter, okay, where'd you put her? Skylar, in a bag. Detective Carter, no, I mean like before the lighter. Where was she? Skylar, in the ground, and I grabbed a shovel. I'm so scared I'm going to prison. Detective Carter, you were telling us what happened. Nothing's going to change what happened, okay? But your intention was to try to cremate her. So what part did you try to light? Skylar, I guess I just... Detective Carter, what part of the remains? Like, did you start at the bottom, at the top? Skylar, at the bottom. Skylar says she doesn't remember how far up the fire went. Detective Carter asks if it could have gone up to Annabelle's chest. Skylar says, maybe. I tried to get it out. Lieutenant Fain, how long would be your closest guess how long she was alive? It doesn't change things if it was 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes or 30 minutes. Skylar, I can't remember. It was so long ago. 5 minutes. Detective Carter, 5 minutes that she was alive or 5 minutes that she was in the toilet? Skylar, maybe she was alive. I don't know. Am I going to jail? Detective Carter, I don't know what's going to happen. That is not up to us, okay? Do you feel like... You keep saying that. Do you feel like you should be? Skylar, I'm so scared. I don't think I should be. I tried.
I know that somehow you know she was alive like before that, and that's why you're worried you didn't do something that could have helped.
Well, I think she might have made a noise.
Make a noise? What kind of noise?
Maybe a little noise, a girl, but I didn't know if it was something else. Like, And then I didn't hear another one.
And another one? Okay, which is natural, because that's what, I mean, again, I'm not a mom, but I've been in the delivery room for four of them, and there's like kind of a gurgle sound, and the doctors will suction out, you know, that's...
I didn't hear it again.
I'm sorry?
I didn't hear it again.
Okay. Was that, like, when she was in the toilet, or was that when you were sleeping?
I think. No, that was when she was in the toilet.
You heard, like, one gurgle, and then not another sound. I thought she said, didn't you thought you heard maybe one more gurgle?
No, I said I didn't hear.
Oh, you didn't hear? Just the one. What else made you think that at first she was alive? Besides the gurgle sound, tell us about, because one thing babies will do is I know, even as they're getting ready to do that suction, like the second when they first come out, you know, they're like their arms, sometimes they're kind of like this, or they don't know.
She might have moved, but I didn't look right away. I was like in shock. I don't.
I understand.
Lieutenant Fain asks if she heard anything, like little gurgle sounds. He says he can tell from Skylar's facial expressions that she feels like she did something awful, but she didn't do it on purpose. But he also knows Annabelle was alive. Skylar tells him she thinks Annabelle may have made a noise. She says a little noise, like a gurgle, but then she didn't hear another one. She says Annabelle may have moved, but she didn't look right away because she was in shock. Detective Carter tells Skylar that Annabelle would be proud of her mom for telling the truth. Skylar sobs and tells them she's scared. The detectives tell her that they'll process Annabelle's remains and get them back to her family if they want to do a funeral and proper burial. Lieutenant Fain and Detective Carter then tell Skylar she's going to jail. They say she'll face a judge in the morning who will decide if or when she can go home. Then Skylar's parents come into the room. They give their daughter a hug. And then Scott asks her what's going on.
Try and tell us what's going on. He said you have to tell us you're 18. He can't tell us.
I tried to cremate the baby just a little.
You tried to cremate the baby?
Yeah, I didn't.
Skylar tells her parents she tried to cremate the baby a little. Scott asks if she delivered a live baby. Skylar says, yeah, but I'm not really sure. She says she didn't feel a heartbeat. They tell her they still love her, but this is a mess. Skylar was taken into custody. She was booked into the Warren County Jail on a charge of reckless homicide, a felony of the third degree. Prosecutors said this charge was because of new evidence that it suggested the baby was born alive and was not stillborn. She was released on bond the next morning. 3 days later, investigators did a third search of the Richardsons' property. This time, they went inside the home. They took phones and electronics and found a giant piece of potential evidence underneath Skylar's bed.
That is a laptop computer that was underneath the bed that we collected and placed into evidence.
Is there anything on the carpet next to the laptop computer?
Yes. There's a area there that has a brownish tint just to the left of that computer. And also just
if
right...
You want, so I'm sorry to interrupt you. Sorry. Sure. You can actually touch the screen to notify the jurors exactly what you're talking about.
The brownish liquid was there and here. And then in between those, there was a area that was depressed where the carpet fibers had been removed. And it appeared that from all aspects that it had been scrubbed.
Deputy John Smith worked as the crime scene supervisor during the Richardson search. He says he learned that Skylar's bed had been moved just before his team arrived that morning. They moved the bed out of the room and then sprayed a forensic chemical called Blue Star to see if the stain they were seeing was blood.
This illumination was almost immediate. There was no prolonged, and it had a very intense illumination, which that means that there was a large concentration of blood in that area.
Did you draw any conclusions from looking at this picture, sir?
Well, we had been told that Miss Richardson had given birth to a child, and when I saw this, I immediately thought that this was probably the location where that child had been laid upon.
Why is that? Time.
When I saw this, I could see the outline of a small torso.
Deputies then cut out and removed that piece of carpet. The underside had a large brown stain, which also illuminated for the possibility of blood. Investigators then used Blue Star in Skylar's bathroom. The floor also illuminated for the possibility of blood. A grand jury indicted Skylar on August 4th, 2017, for charges of aggravated murder, involuntary manslaughter, endangering a child, tampering with evidence, and gross abuse of a corpse. Warren County Prosecutor David P. Fornshell held a press conference, and when asked about a possible motive, he said, quote, "Skylar and her family, particularly her mother, were pretty obsessed with external appearances and how things appear to the outside world. And you have a situation where she's a cute, recent graduate. She was a cheerleader, a described good girl by her attorney. I think that kind of perception is one that Skylar wanted to perpetuate and her mother wanted to perpetuate." Skylar was released from jail on $50,000 bond and remained under court-ordered house arrest pending trial. Dr. Murray conducted a second examination of the bones just weeks later, on August 17, 2017. This time, she finalized her opinion, and it was different than her initial findings. This time, she found no thermal injury and no evidence of burning. She concluded that the bones were not, in fact, burned. She gave her findings to the prosecutor's office. About 3 weeks after that second exam, Dr. Murray sent the following email to forensic pathologist Dr. Susan Brown. Quote, "Susan, the prosecutor's office seems upset with me that I wasn't more definitive about the burning. But you and I saw what we saw. Those bones looked so different from my July visit to my August visit, and we discussed that. I told them that with microscopy, I might be able to be more definitive, but I wasn't asked to do that, nor was I told of the importance of burning to their case, in order that I might consider doing it." Dr. Brown replied, saying that she also didn't realize it was a crucial part of the prosecution's game plan. She said that if Dr. Murray would like to do this extra step, and if the prosecutors agree, she's okay with it. In an email dated later that day, Dr. Murray said, quote, "Whatever you think is best, I'm happy to do a second exam and addendum to the report. But if I don't see it, that's what I have to say, which is why you see that it was my opinion when I talked to you guys that it appeared there may have been burning. You and I saw how different the bones looked on the second exam. I ain't gonna lie to them, but I sure ain't gonna lie for them." Prosecutors proceeded with the case, and Skylar's trial was scheduled for April 2018. Just days before the trial was set to begin, the Warren County Sheriff had something important to say about his top detective, Lieutenant John Fain. Sheriff Larry Sims wrote a letter describing a relationship Lieutenant Fain had apparently had with the woman he met on Snapchat. The relationship continued in secret while Lieutenant Fain was on duty and while he was married to a Warren County judge, the sheriff said in the letter. Quote, "Your actions will cause your integrity to be questioned for the remainder of your career." The sheriff demoted Lieutenant Fain. At his disciplinary hearing, Lieutenant Fain said in a written statement that this relationship and the Richardson case have nothing to do with one another. An internal investigation concluded that Lieutenant Fain violated rules of unsatisfactory performance, unbecoming conduct, and absenteeism / reporting for duty. The investigation was prompted, in part, by information from a freelance reporter covering Skylar's case. The report found Lieutenant Fain would drive this woman to a house in a county-issued vehicle and without permission, and the two would stay there for about an hour. This happened up to 20 times towards the end of 2017. Lieutenant Fain said that they were just friends and they would have casual conversations during that hour. He said their meetings ended when her husband found out about them. Lieutenant Fain reported the relationship 2 months later, after a reporter requested to review his personnel file. Quote, "Your actions have been a foundation for defense counsel's attempt to discredit you and possibly the investigation," the sheriff wrote to Lieutenant Fain. Lieutenant Fain later filed a grievance with the sheriff's office and was eventually given his lieutenant rank back. His demotion was changed to a suspension, and he was given back pay for the salary he should have received. In return, Lieutenant Fain agreed to retire. And in yet another turn, Skylar's trial was delayed pending an appeal from her defense team. They argued against the judge's ruling allowing in some medical records and testimony from Skylar's OBGYN at trial. The Ohio Supreme Court denied the motion for reconsideration, and the doctor-patient information would come in. Attorneys for both sides continued to prepare for trial. Skylar's defense team filed several pre-trial motions. In one of them, they asked for a change of venue. They said the prosecutors continued with their claim that the bones were burnt, even after Dr. Murray changed her opinion and the local jury pool was tainted. They also asked the judge to dismiss Skylar's indictment. They said the prosecutor unintentionally presented false evidence to the grand jury, which was before Dr. Murray's second exam. And they requested the jury be able to view the crime scene during the trial. In August 2019, Warren County Judge Donald Oda denied all of these motions. 2 weeks later, Skylar's case went to trial. In part two, we'll break down the trial of Ohio versus Brooke Skylar Richardson. With the change of evidence, how will the trial be affected? Stay tuned. This episode was researched and written by Jennifer Tintner from the Law and Crime Network. You can follow Jennifer on Twitter @JenniferTintner.